Welcome to the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast with me, Kathy Love. I'm a business coach who helps allied health professionals run powerful and profitable businesses in the disability sector. Join me for cutting-edge interviews with leaders in the allied health and business fields, along with plenty of practical content that you can use to make your business practice perfect.
Hello, hello. Today on the podcast, this is really going to be a good catch-up chat because I haven't spoken with Chris and Georgia for months. They are the superpowers at Walk Digital. So how about you guys? How about, Chris, you introduce yourself? What's your role in that Mighty Prime establishment?
So my name's Chris. I'm the co-founder of Walk Digital. My partner, Georgia, who just help herself in a sec, is the more creative and the strategic side of Walk Digital, and I'm the technical guy. So I help Georgia comes up with the plan and the creative of what we want to achieve, and I put it all together and make it work. So I set up a lot of the automations if we're doing in our marketing. I set up the sort of technical sides of that. I set up all of the reporting. So I set up all of your, you know, for Facebook, setting up the pixel and the tracking data and making sure all the reporting things work properly, and making sure that we record all the metrics, and I build and manage the campaigns.
Just in that introduction, there's 2 hours of conversation. But ultimately, you just make Georgia's dreams come true. Georgia?
So, yes, I kind of am more the strategic side of things, but more planning around, you know, what the key messaging will be that reacts with your target audience. How will you actually make them stop and want to interact with your business? What makes people talk about you? What makes people feel really passionate toward your business? How do you delight them so that, you know, you're really making a difference as opposed to just your competitors or anyone else out there? And also where, I guess, which channels to spread that message through in terms of digital. So whether it be social, whether it be search, where are people living? Where are your target market living? Where are they potentially looking for your services, or even just browsing where you could catch their attention and basically initiate a conversation with them? That's really kind of where I see it. And then Chris does all the fancy technical things to just make that magically happen.
Absolutely, absolutely. So with digital, having a digital marketing strategy, I suspect that some people listening might think, oh my God, that's Facebook. And Facebook is one thing, but how would you sort of describe what a digital marketing strategy could be?
It definitely shouldn't be just one channel, for example. So Facebook is definitely not the be-all and end-all of where you can reach the people that you want to interact with. It's definitely one part, and depending on, you know, who you are and what you're offering, that should be a communication point. But there's a lot of other ways that you can reach your market. So many, especially just in the digital world, there's just new sites that people are looking at when they're browsing the webs, when they're browsing apps, when they're on LinkedIn, when they're getting push messages from all over the place, as well as obviously Instagram and Facebook, but also when they're actively searching for something, either on an app or in Google or anywhere else. It's just, there's a whole lot of points, and depending on what you are, what you're offering and who your target market is, obviously you need a strategy where you're going to be able to reach the most amount of people who want to actively engage with your business at the best return on investment. Obviously you don't want to be throwing a whole lot of money just at Facebook when you're only getting one or two inquiries from it, and that's money down the drain if everyone else is, if you're paying for all of that promotion and you're not actually getting anything back from it. That's really, it's about making sure you've got a kind of varied communication strategy. And even if you attract people on Facebook, then that's not, you may want to retarget them then when they're when they're browsing the web or when they're doing something else, because you know you've already got them. If they've visited your website or they've interacted with you on Facebook, then you can follow up with a really a different message. You can have different messages that, and you know that they've if on Facebook, for example, or if on the web, they've clicked on an article or something that is one specific thing. Say it was you're a psychologist and it was about anxiety. Then you can then retarget them wherever they are with other messages. Different. You can try out different, have a journey of different messages and see what reacts. So it's really quite powerful. So again, not just Facebook, but having a whole, almost like a user journey.
Ecosystem,
so, you touch them the first time and then that they might not be interested enough or they may not know anything about you. So then you want to then slowly feed them different messages down the chain to the point where they contact you and they make an appointment.
Yeah, so I think in terms of the different strategy, we essentially start with who the target market is and who you're trying to attract, because where they are and what appeals to them is where you want to be advertising. So we generally are, what we start at the very beginning when we work on a digital strategy is we look at who your specific target market is, what their passion and pain points are, the things that motivate them, where they'll be, like where they're likely to be hanging out or spending time. And that's kind of, we'll work out in terms of a strategy of what to say to them and what channels to use. We start at that point.
And trying to find out what their problem is and how you solve it, basically. But the very bottom line, that is, what's their problem, specific problem, and how do you solve it?
Yeah, I guess that step often gets missed and you just go straight to promoting a product or a something or other and you just, you know, hit click and $50 and cross your fingers. But in my experience, really digging into who your ideal client is and their habits and beliefs and their sources of trust and information, it feels as though it takes forever, but it really means that you can zoom in the strategy. How do you kind of guide your clients to find that ideal client avatar, for want of a better word?
We usually start by we undertake an interview process and we start asking questions about, you know, who your ideal client is, or if they're not sure. Some people say off the bat, well, anyone could be, anyone's a potential client. When we're sort of working in that point, we usually delve a little bit deeper in terms of who are your best clients, who, what works, why are those clients your best clients, what works well.
Who do you like the most? Because it's okay to like some clients more than others.
Yeah.
Or even, you know, what, in terms of your current clients or your past clients, what were the problems that you were able to most easily solve for people that really made an impact on them? Because sometimes it's not what do you like or what do you think you want to sell? It's just like, how have you made the biggest difference in someone's life, and by solving that particular problem? And then that's, if it impacted them really like hugely, then that's likely going to be something that down the track you'll be able to solve someone's problem and that'll resonate with them.
Yeah. Also working on, when we're sort of talking with people about what are the types of clients, what have been the clients that you've had the most trouble with, and what sort of, you know, the types of clients that you don't want to attract.
really important.
That is actually really important, because
really
some people
important.
say, oh, our target market is this and this and this and this, and then you realise that one of those target markets, you actually spend a lot of money trying to reach and trying to get, and then you don't actually get as much out of them. So really honing in on the ones that I guess are the best fit for you, and you get the best return on investment out, and who are best for you, I guess, going back into the market, spreading the word about your business as well.
So once you've got the ideal client somewhat seen and imagined, what's the next step in the process?
The next step is to come up with the messaging, the types of communication that we want to run to it. So I'll let you pick this up, because this is your area of strength.
So that's really when we look at the channels and where we look at who these people are and those target market that you've identified as your best potential customers and where they're living, and really focusing on what we were saying before, what their passion points are. to your point, Kathy, where you were saying, you know, what are their needs? What are their loves? What are their frustrations? What are their passion points and what are their pain points? And really focusing on those, because that they're the things that cut through when you, when you're talking to people. It's like what they're really passionate about and that what they aspire to, or what they're just really frustrated by and what's a huge problem at the moment that they want to obviously find a solution for. So in terms of the key messaging, really focusing on those pain and passion points and coming up with really specific messages around them, and then having like a chain of content and messages that can go through for each particular person, and then looking at what the best channel fit is for that specific target market. Like, where are you going to send that message to reach that and attract that target market? And then also, you know, what's the journey of messaging you'll send them on that will ultimately get you that client?
Yeah, that the need to have a story and to have a series of messages was really interesting for us as a team to learn in the early days, or probably me personally. I suspect my team knew all along and they're just patiently waiting for the penny to drop. One ad probably isn't going to kind of reap the benefits that you want, and that really jeopardizes your trust, I think, in a way. And so to really have a series that might go over a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks, or, you know, we worked on the campaign for the virtual conference that goes over 6 to 8 weeks. And to really build some story and some trust and some humor and some exchange, and not kind of going straight in for what could be described as the sell. That's a bit harsh.
That's it, especially in this industry. Like, people could go on that information search, or you can, they can start thinking about it a long time before they actually decide to actually take the plunge and book an appointment. So it's really about like establishing yourself as a credible company in that space.
A
personal expert, but also by having those specific messages that talk to either those passion or pain, frustration, problems. By having a series that are designed specifically for that type of person, you know, hopefully you have one that really resonates with them, and they've kind of been reading it, and then this one just resonates and they go, oh, that is what I need. That's exactly what I need. And also one other thing that's really important is making it easy for them to then take the next step and contact you, making it as easy as possible, like having an online booking system where if there's a lot of people, you know, they're really busy at work, and then they're busy getting dinner, and then they're busy doing everything, and then it's not till about 9 o'clock at night or something that they go, oh, I might just have a look at what's my emails on the phone, or I might just look at social media, or go and have
meaning a to book an appointment with.
And then it's 9 o'clock at night and you're not open. So then if you have I book pretty much all of my doctor's appointments at about
the midnight mothering.
Yeah, exactly. All of them. And when that online booking came in, it was just, this is the best. Like, I once booked an appointment at 2 o'clock in the morning, and just because it was like I woke up and I'm like, oh, my God, I need to go to the doctor. I made a booking. So it's just making it as seamless and easy as possible for them to actually reach out at the time that you resonate, that message resonates, that exact time, being able to reach out and actually, you know, capture them where you've worked really hard to get their attention and build their trust, and then being able to capture it at that point.
Yeah, I think also it's worth mentioning that different channels, like, people might be the different side, like the different sort of stages of becoming aware about your service. So if you're using Facebook for advertising, for example, and you're targeting a specific market, the ads that they see, that might be the first time they've ever heard about your business, and they're not necessarily actively looking. So I think the messages there should be, particularly in the first, you know, those first type of ads, should be less sales and more about positioning you as an expert and providing value to your target market.
Yeah.
Whereas if they're doing a Google search, for example, you're doing an AdWords search, there's someone that they're specifically looking for that service at that point in time. So the messaging can be slightly different there. Yeah. And also, once you've gathered and started building an audience, if you're doing any kind of remarketing, so you're doing ads to people that have already engaged with you, or doing email marketing, you can change the message again because they've already got they could be a little bit further down the decision making process.
The other thing that is a really simple thing, and if you take one thing away from this podcast, this, so everyone get a pen, use examples. Use examples of real-life situations that have happened and real-life successes or real-life problems that have been solved. And I'm about to use one now. So for one of our NDIS clients that we had recently, actually, we worked out all of this strategy and we did a series of promotions and marketing. And we got a lot of interaction, we got a lot of engagement, but we didn't actually get many inquiries. So then, we tried a few things and we used examples, specific examples of clients on the NDIS and the teams that they'd been working with and the really amazing outcomes, like how they what they were like when they first came. We had four different stories, I think, for all different types of clients. And what they were like when they came and then the amazing outcomes and the difference that it made in their lives towards the end. And so the example as well is we had these stories and we were using them and people were really engaged and watching them, but we just didn't have those inquiries. So then we thought, okay, what do we do? And we're like, let's do a quiz. And we did a quiz on Facebook using the retargeting audience, so only people who'd already engaged with those messages. And all of a sudden in like two days or something, there was something like and we had a really low budget as well. It wasn't a high budget. It was like
$150 on
it. Yeah, we had 8 or 9 specific people who wanted to come in and went from nothing to, which is it's using examples and then trying different things and even not just different channels but different ways that people want to interact. Because they're like, do the quiz now to see, it's like, oh, and all of a sudden it was just like that call to action and that, I guess, type of thing.
Novelty as well.
Yeah. And also they gave us so much more information. We're getting all this information. Which was great. And
The other benefit was we knew specifically what type of services that they were interested in because we asked specific questions. It was an NDIS certified fitness instructor, so they did specific fitness programs
focusing on increasing mobility and independence.
Yeah, so they basically we also got to work out whether they wanted one-on-one training or whether they wanted to work in a group. They were mainly doing one-on-one services, but the majority of people that were coming back on the quiz actually wanted to be in group classes
because of the social element.
So they
as
wanted
well.
To start looking at what they could do to have. They need everyone needs individual attention, but working if they want it, how they could group them together in groups, so changing service a little bit as well.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of stories and success stories or experience stories as well. And there's going to be plenty of people listening who have thrown up their hands. Hopefully, they're not driving, saying, "Oh, but we can't do testimonials." I don't know how many times you've ever heard that, but I know that I've heard it a ton of times. And we're not suggesting testimonials. There are, in fact, 99 other things that you can do that are better than testimonials.
Yeah, we didn't even do testimonials.
You can still tell the story in the app without it being...
It was just one of our clients whose situation was this, and we didn't say names or anything like that, but it really resonated. And then having the quiz, it was like tell us more about what you need so we can see which path fits or how you can get these outcomes as well. And all of a sudden it was that call to action that resonated. So try lots of different things.
But that's the bit about the messaging in the way that you work with clients. Once you've got the message, what's the next step? Like, I'm guessing it's about selecting the platform and the budget and just getting started. What's that next phase?
Yeah, so you look at what channels you want to work on. So what channels you use will probably depend somewhat on budget, and also you might initially. Another thing is in different industries and different markets, you might get different you might get better results on one channel than the other. Generally, we start with running a few. So we might, for example, run a Facebook campaign and run an AdWords campaign if an AdWords campaign is relevant. once we've been working with a client for a while, we might eliminate one of those, or we might only run quite often, for example, if it's a local business, quite often we run AdWords for AdWords for the majority of the time, and then we might use Facebook for particular campaigns.
Or even Facebook for retargeting, where you've already, you get them through a search, so you know they've specifically been searching for that product, and then you target them on Facebook. So you're not wasting a lot of money with a broad reach, you're only retargeting those people who've already actively searching.
Yeah. I think we need to talk about what retargeting is.
Yep.
So retargeting is where you're only, when you're running, say, for example, a campaign, a marketing campaign, you're only serving and paying for that message to be served for the people who've already interacted with you. And so, for example, you can set it so you're only getting the people who've clicked. So if they've clicked on you in search, in Google, they've searched for your product and they've clicked on you and they've gone to your website, you can then send a message, send an advertisement to them on Facebook just to those specific people. So it won't go to like a whole lot of people. So you spend a whole lot of money trying to reach a broad audience. You're just sending it. You're sending a dig, and that's where you tell your stories. So obviously you can't tell a story very well on like a Google ad or something, but Facebook, if they've already looked and they've gone to your website, that's interesting, but they haven't engaged, then you can then tell your success stories and have different messages about all of these really inspiring things on Facebook. And then they will over a period of time, you can do 1 week, you'd send them this story, the next week, send them this story, the next week, send them this story. And you're not spending a lot of money on Facebook because you're only retargeting the people who've already interacted with you. But so that's where you're building that trust and you're building that conversation and that story over time.
Yeah. And you can run it. I mean, you can set the retargeting up in different ways. So you can, if you've got multiple services, you might only want to run your retargeting for one particular service. So you can set it so if they've only if they've looked at that particular content on, they've only been to that particular website, web page, I should say, or they've interacted with a specific content on Facebook, then you can remarket them just based on those. Because we have some clients that have multiple different services, and we run different types of creative for the different services.
And that way it's a lot more specific to the, you know, your messaging is a lot more specific to what that person wants, because if you're targeting, they've only looked at this particular thing, then you're targeting based on that particular thing as opposed to all the things that you do.
Everybody listening will be familiar with retargeting, and I hope I get this right. You guys can fix up my explanation. It's when you've been on the website, possibly looking at a new pair of shoes or perhaps a dress or that little foxy handbag you had your eye on, and you don't actually buy it, but then for the next 4 days it appears right across your Facebook feed, just teasing you and enticing you to go back to the site.
Sometimes it's good to be subtle with the retargeting as opposed to just slamming you with the same thing for days on end, so you're just like, oh my God, stop.
I think a pair of earrings have been haunting me for a good month now.
Yeah.
4, 5, 6 weeks.
Yeah, but you can just do it so, like, even if they visited, you can even set it for a week, 1 week after they've visited the site, send them this story, and then so you're not bombarding them. And then another, after another week has passed, send them this story, and then another week. So it's so you don't have to be slamming them, because sometimes people just I really don't want
these earrings now. I really don't want them.
Yeah. Sometimes I'm just too much, looking at them. But it's good to have a balance.
I think that's an important point in terms of not overdoing it. You can track, and we might talk a little bit more about metrics if we have time, but you can see when you're looking at the stats in the ads how many times it gets served. And you want to make sure that you're not your retargeting audience. Another thing worth mentioning is if you only have a small amount of visitors to your website or you're not getting that, the retargeting might not be doing paid advertising remarketing might not be a good idea, because you might only have 100 people in your audience. And then what if you set a $20 or $30 budget, Facebook's just going to keep serving the ad to those people over and over again until it spends the budget.
But you can set it so that you're only serving it to them for that. You can get around that for that one day. Yeah. So between seven days. So it's quite technical, the back end to set it up, but But it's good to do that. So because the last thing you want to be doing is annoying people.
Yeah, when it's a smaller audience, we set the audience to be for a smaller period of time. So we would say we want a person who's visited that particular page of the website in the last 5 days or 10 days, and it depends on how big the audience is and how long they kind of take to make a decision. So they're just some things to think about.
And that's also why it's good to have those sequence of messages, as opposed to a lot of companies or a lot of people just do, they set retargeting, they've got one retargeting ad. So they just keep saying the same thing. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're doing the different things in a sequence, then it's not annoying because it's very similar as if you're going through your Facebook feed and there's different news that comes up. It's always different. So it's not just bombarding you with the same thing over and over again, which is much better.
Makes you hate the earrings.
Yes, exactly. Ugg boots once. It was just, and it was a present. And it's just like, oh, enough with the Ugg
boots. Stop with the Ugg boots. Alrighty. So we know who the client is. We know what we're selling. We know where they hang out. We know how to find them. We're using technology to get all of this stuff automagical, as I call it. I want to ask a question about video, but I'll save that one. So you're going to have photos and you're going to have words and you're going to have video, and how do you kind of get that mix as right as possible?
With the messaging, so basically if you're working on the strategy and you've looked at the target market and you've looked at the types of things that's going to resonate with them, the copy for the ads is very much built around that. So you're coming up with stories or coming up with copy that focuses on those passion and pain points. And you wouldn't just have one ad, so you would do a bunch of ads together with a few different messages and a few different different images.
A different story.
Different stories, yes. Obviously, if you've got video or access to video, that's another good way to tell a story. You also generally, from a Facebook point of view, generally get served at a cheaper rate or a lower cost per click for video. Not always the case, but I find on most of the campaigns we run, if I run three different creatives and one of them is a video, it always gets cheaper CPC.
Having said that, sometimes it's not best to have all video.
Yeah,
sometimes a really, when you've delivered video and you've told lots of stories, and sometimes just a really clear call to action will just really punch through, even if it's like for the one that we did recently, the story that we were telling in the quiz, that was literally, we'd done lots and lots of videos and different videos and people had engaged a lot. And then that last one was just an image one saying, do the quiz now. So it's not it's better to have like an image or a text one that's really clear, can really just punch through when you're like at the point where, okay, we've really nurtured them and we've really built that trust and they're really interested. No, let's just do a really big call to action and bang, you can have a big result.
Yeah, and very much once that's up and running, you measure the results and you look at what's working, because if you're running a series of different ads, you'll generally see one specific message or maybe two specific messages will jump out, and they'll be the ones that people interact with most. The same with Google and same with Facebook, they generally throw all of them out there and then they see what gets the best reactions, and then it starts optimizing to the ones that are getting the best reactions. If you're not getting any kind of interaction at all, try a different message, try a different
Absolutely.
Story. So it's very much anything you're doing in digital marketing, it's very much looking at the results and fine-tuning and getting better, improving on each specific time.
And it learns as well. Like you'll get better results over time. Like when you first start advertising, it's still working out what it's doing. And so you'll tend to pay a higher price to start with until you optimize and you get it to a point where the cost comes down. And then it's like, and then once it's done, it's learning. It's kind of like, okay, and then it's found the right mix, and then it's going to run with that, and it's not going to cost as much.
Another thing that we should mention is that you need to, when you, so the other thing that we haven't talked about is the objective of the campaign. So it should be your objective might be a certain, might be appointment bookings. It might be phone. You might if you take phone calls, it might be taking the phone inquiries. It might just be somebody filling in an inquiry form online
or a quiz.
So you want to have an objective of what you want, what the end game is of what you want people to do. And then when you're building your campaigns, you have that objective in mind in terms of I want to get a certain, I want to get leads or I want to get appointments. And then because that's what you start measuring your performance on in terms of how many appointments you're getting for your budget or how it's going. And that's what you want to try and optimize and improve for.
And this comes back to the metrics and measuring the metrics and making sure that you're tracking everything as you're going. You're looking, because the worst thing you want to do is to go, okay, here are all these things and here's all our channels and we're just going to throw it out there. And then you need to be tracking that, because obviously you want to be fine-tuning it down to the absolute best return on investment that you can get, so you're paying the lowest amount to get your customers.
Yep. I'm not sure that there's many allied health business owners out there that are super excited by tracking the metrics of their campaigns. There may be one or two. They may have, parked the car at this point and pen poised. Describe really quickly how you kind of do that and how you help your clients, because I know it's not my faith. I'm interested to see it, but I don't seek it out.
Having something like an online booking form as well is... like in terms of being able to really track the journey and really track what's working and what's not, having that makes a huge difference as well, because then you can track the entire process to the point where they click that online booking button.
So the first step in that is I'm sure that the people listening have probably heard of Facebook Pixel and Google Analytics tracking codes. Basically, they're all of those things are snippets of code which you embed in your website or your app. If you've got an app, you can put them in apps as well, that tracks what people do on the specific on the specific platform. So that they basically they're there. So when somebody visits the site, it tracks what they do and where they go. It allows for retargeting. It also allows you to track your to track what people are doing
and when they've converted and when they've taken action.
Yeah. So if you've got it set up, if you have your analytics and you've got your tracking set up instead of in such a way that it tracks the process from beginning to end to the point where they've made their purchase or made their booking. Sometimes you can't, some systems it's not possible to do the whole journey, but you can track it up to a certain point. You can start measuring the result. You can start looking and saying, okay, in this campaign we had 200 people visit the website and we got a conversion of five inquiries, five inquiries. So you kind of look at those in percentages and you work out what your cost per acquisition is. So I say it cost me for that to get that particular client, it cost me $20 or $30 of advertising, or it very much that actual amount varies very much depending on the area. And for some people, spending $100 to acquire a client is a reasonable amount. For some people, it's $30. It really depends on what your service is
and what the average lifetime value is
value
of the customer
the
for that specific service that you're marketing.
But with having that tracking in place, I think the majority of people that we start working with, they sometimes have some of it set up. So they might have analytics on their website and they might have a Facebook Pixel, but they haven't actually set up to measure conversions. So if you're setting in Google Analytics, you can set up what's called a goal, and you can say when they fill in that form, we know that that's an inquiry, or whether if they've made that online booking, we know that that's a purchase. So you can even, if you know what the value of the purchase is, you can even assign a dollar value to the purchase. And having that information in there makes the analytics really powerful, because you can see, you can track. One of the huge advantages of digital advertising is you can track your spend. And it's not all of that tracking, there's all the different platforms usually measure things slightly differently. So it's not always, if you look at your Facebook analytics and you look at your Google analytics, they'll probably say slightly different things, but you can get an overall picture for where your money, what's working and where you're spending your money and what you're getting the best return on investment for.
And also there's a lot of changes and there's a lot of things that are always happening, but generally you can work out from that and have a really good indicator of what's working and what's not. But it's definitely where it's really great where you act when you actually get down to those numbers and you can put it in a dollar value that it becomes, you know, really powerful.
How do you guys stay current with it all?
It changes. Oh,
daily.
It
changes.
Yes.
Hourly.
Often. Yeah. Like sometimes you'll go into Facebook and it's completely changed the whole.
That happened with us one time.
Set up. Also, Apple have been changing a whole lot of things in regards to the cookies as well and things like that. It changes, I wouldn't say daily, but weekly probably. So it's like whenever I'm working on a campaign with a client, like even just recently we were running for a different kind of industry, we were running an international campaign and over a period of a week, there was something like three different changes and rules that had come back, like the Facebook 20% text rule, which you probably don't know. When you're advertising on Facebook, there used to be a rule where you could only have 20% of text. Then they removed that rule and it would just give you a warning saying you may reach less people. And then it was only probably a month ago they put it back in. So all of a sudden these ads that we were running couldn't run anymore because they're like, no, now it doesn't. But then a week after that, we became the exception that we're allowed to have because it was touring.
Facebook,
it was crazy. That was over 2 weeks.
Yeah, Facebook probably changes more than any other platform. It's a massive platform and they're always trying different things. I think if you're running your own Facebook ads as an allied health professional, the most important thing in terms of putting your ads up is just making sure you stay within their terms and conditions for what you're allowed to advertise. Yeah. Because Facebook can be, they have an algorithm that blocks accounts, and we've had stories and we've had some personal experience with Facebook closing down advertising accounts without giving any reason, and you have to deal with you generally get an automated response from them in terms of what they won't necessarily tell you why it's been suspended. So it's really important if you're in an area that has some like legal specifics, it's very important to make sure that you stick within those. Normally they're lenient in terms of letting you go with a warning. Like they might say they might block the ad. But we've had instances and we've had a story. We had a story of one of our people that we worked with actually got their account banned for an ad that hadn't run for over 12 months. The algorithm had just decided that it didn't like it.
That's actually a really good point. If you ever have an ad where it says you've breached some sort of term, delete it. Don't just turn it off. Delete the ad, because then later if you change something else and it's using the same audience, then it might review that ad, the old one that you've turned off again, and then it can come up and have another ping, and then it can get your... So if it ever says that you've breached any policy, just delete whatever it is that and start again.
That just sounds like a nightmare. That's why people should work with people like you. That's just more than the average allied health business owner can tolerate.
It is very tricky, and it's I mean, from my perspective, when I'm working, when I'm building Facebook, when I'm building a Facebook ad campaign, I just assume that there'll be a technical error somewhere along the line. It is getting better. I've noticed in the last few months it's been better, but I just account for that time because I don't know what it's going to be, but I know it'll be something that won't quite work the way that it's supposed to. It's a very complicated program, and it doesn't always work the way that it's supposed to.
But you think it has billions of ads running, like this one program has billions of ads running through it at any one time, and it's a beast. And they can't fix all the errors and they can't fix all the bugs. So you just need to know how to troubleshoot around it.
So what do you think digital marketing will look like in the next 2 or 3 years? What don't we know yet?
I think the privacy thing will come in even stronger. I mean, Apple have been taking steps to try and really boost up that privacy thing. And I think that'll be something that some of I think that's going to be really something around that.
What that means just quickly is that a lot of the tracking, a lot of the what Apple is doing is setting a much faster expiry date for cookies once they collect them. So if you use a Safari on your phone or your browser, if you go to it's only going to keep the tracking for a day. So it's going to, from a marketing point of view, a challenge is going to be some of those statistics that we rely on to make decisions aren't going to be as accurate as they used to be. So we have to. There's ways around it, and there's
you create your own formulas to, I guess, fill the gaps.
Analytics has already worked a formula where it's already working around. It's already making educated guesses based on its algorithm. You know, it's filling in the blanks of where some of that information doesn't exist anymore.
The other thing might be that it becomes stricter in terms of the information and the guidelines you need to follow, just in regards to all the stuff they're talking about in facts, in advertising, that sort of thing. And with Google and with Facebook, so many ads go in. Like, you can create a Google account and half an hour later you can run an ad. Same with Facebook. So it's just like, in terms of make sure that people are credible and real businesses, like Google are quite good at this, in terms of you have to have like a your specific website, and it has to be the same domain, and it has to have your logo on it as well. Whereas Facebook are a lot more lax. You can send it to anyone's Facebook. Whereas, so I think Facebook hopefully in the future will tighten up those regulations so that the people that are advertising will be real people and real companies, as opposed to just anyone who can just start something and then run it. I think that's going to be something that's really going to come out in the future, which might actually make it more difficult. I think just the in terms of the automation and the algorithms and being able to recognise someone of exactly what they're going to be interested in that time, that's always getting better and better and better. And I think the AIs, in terms of knowing what you're looking at, even now the email systems are starting to have their own AIs, which start to, when you run a campaign, they're like, oh, well, this person likes to read emails at 7 o'clock at night, and this person likes to read emails at 9 o'clock in the morning. So you wouldn't send an email campaign at 9 o'clock at night. You'd send an email campaign, and it will deliver those emails at different times to all the people on your database, depending on when they're most likely to be reading their emails. Yeah. And also with ads as well, those AIs will start knowing when people's browsing behavior is, and you could hopefully you might be able to pay a premium to then serve your ad at that time to that person. You might be able to bid on the times and things and the exactly when they're most likely to be looking, as opposed to just bidding for the person and the platform and a keyword. That's the AIs, I think, will definitely make it more complicated, but also more targeted.
Definitely in the email marketing space, the personalization and having personalized content for people, that's definitely the area where that space is going. As Georgia mentioned, we work and some other platforms do it as well, but we work a lot with ActiveCampaign, and they have that element where they know what time people open their emails, so they're changing it to that. We have clients where they have different types of avatars, so they have different types of clients, and we change the content that we deliver to them based on how they've interacted with previous content or what web pages they've gone and what web pages they visit.
But you probably, this is just me assuming this is what it's going to be like, you'll probably also be able to tailor the types of content, the languages, the types of images, like whether they're close up or whether they're, you'll be able to tailor all of this stuff just by uploading a whole lot of different things, and then the system just delivers what it knows that they want to see as opposed to what you've set out. So it's a lot.
What you think they want.
Web design's definitely going in that direction. Static web pages, will slowly be a thing of it. You know, I think they'll be around for a fair time to come. But what will replace static web pages, where everybody that goes to the homepage sees the same thing? Each person that goes to the homepage can see different content depending on where they've come from and what they're, type of person they are.
Already a thing. There's a company that I used to work for who they sold their software company, and then they started this company, which I've been talking to them about, which the web page is completely personal, like their homepage is completely personalized depending on what that other person has been looking at around the web. So
when they go to say your
website, whether it's walkdigital.com, they see something that's completely personalized based on what they're looking for. So it's got a way to go, and that privacy stuff will, and it'll be based on cookies. And if it's not based on cookies, it'll be based on a network where, like the Google network, where, as a network of a whole lot of websites. But so the companies that are making it can have a deal with Google where it knows all of those
big data.
So it can feed it. It's not even very expensive. It was really reasonable to be able to put that into your website. He hasn't built up the network big enough yet to make it work, but when they do, I'll be like, yeah, let's do that. It's amazing, especially if you're an entertainment company or even like if you're
food.
You've got the food, or even for NDIS where you do a lot of different types of clients, or even if you're a service like, you know, where you're not just NDIS, you do NDIS, but you also do a whole lot of other areas, they can just come and they'll see exactly the types of service that they're after. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Mm. Oh, my gosh. That's exciting. That's really exciting. I always learn stuff when I talk with you guys. It's very cool. How about you guys have the last word, the last parting words on allied health professionals and helping them get, I guess, the confidence and the results from their digital strategy?
Be specific and tell stories with examples and successes.
Don't worry if they're not testimonials. They don't need to be.
Make them testimonial.
They just need to resonate. They just need to resonate with the target market. And you got to really think about the problem, like the problem that person might be experiencing and how you can solve it.
Yeah. So think of your six best success stories and then make each of them a story that you can put on social or you can put wherever. Just six. Yeah. So your six best successes.
My nerdy side would be saying start tracking. If you haven't got
I was just waiting for the nerdy side to emerge.
If you haven't got your Facebook Pixel installed it now and get it in your website. So even if you're not running advertising, it'll be gathering information about the people who visit your site. Same with analytics. Those things tell the stories, and then if you do ever happen to do that marketing yourself or engage with a marketing company, it gives them so much more information to start with. But if you start looking at those things, it'll start telling a story, and it might tell a different story than what you think it will.
Yeah.
Because quite often when we start, people think a certain thing and then we look at the data and it tells us a different story.
Yeah.
That's all. Simples.
That's my native idea.
Simples. Simples, simples, simples. Thank you so much, guys, for coming in and sharing just a little drop of your wisdom. We have to make sure we get you back next year, particularly around those personalised websites. I'm just about to Google that and find out more. I'm intrigued. Thanks, guys.
No worries.
Bye, Kathy. Bye, everyone.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast. For show notes and other resources, please visit practicemadeperfectpodcast.com. While you are there, you can subscribe for future episodes and continue your business adventure with me. And please be sure to share this and other episodes with your friends and colleagues.